All right, thank you so much for that. Welcome back to Sports Byline. Rick Tittle with you coast to coast, border to border, around the world on the American Forces Radio Network as well. Cal Ripken was in the building, and we've grabbed him, and he's nice enough to come in the studio here just for about 10 minutes. And, you know, Cal, when I think about you, I remember years ago you talking about how you liked soccer, and I'm a big, big soccer guy myself, and I always would point to people who said, ah, nobody cares, and I always say, Cal Ripken cares. And last night we had the USA qualify for their seventh straight World Cup. Were you watching? Were you paying attention to that?
You know, I can't say that I'm a soccer fan on TV. If I'm moving around and watching it, I enjoy the game. I enjoy really playing it. And I give advice to all the kids out there that I think of all the sports, it really teaches your agility and your balance in a different sort of way. Because what else do you do without using your hands? I know you use your hands a little bit if you're a goalie or you throw the ball in from the sidelines, but you have to constantly be moving yourself and contorting yourself and changing your balance on right and left by kicking and running and doing all those things. So I think of Hakeem Olajuwon in basketball. Yeah. Look at his footwork as a big guy underneath, and I think that sort of footwork translates to every sport. So I'm a big advocate of it. I play, but I can't say that I'm a true fan where I sit down and watch it and follow it.
Yeah, Hakeem Olajuwon, of course, a goalie in his younger days as well. Now, on a more serious note, today is 9/11, and I remember going to the Oakland Coliseum on Cal Ripken Day back in 2001. It was in the first week of September, I want to say around the 5th or the 6th. We got these little lanyards, these things that held our tickets in it. It was a big day, and you're one of those guys that, I mean, everybody, you know, like Jeter's hated in Boston, right? You're one of these guys that everybody loves Cal Ripken. I never heard anybody say, I can't stand that guy. So it was kind of a love fest. If I remember, the A's won, so it was okay. We got to fet you, and we got to watch the A's win. But then I literally 4 or 5 days later was 9/11 and what that did and how baseball helped, you know, that Diamondbacks-Yankees series, how baseball helped get things back. What was that like for you, a player at that time, just because today's anniversary?
Yeah, I mean, you constantly think about it. You know, whether you look at the clock and you see 9/11 on the clock, it seems like you notice that a whole lot more. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, looking at it at this time of the year, you do go back to feeling what the role that baseball might have played in help healing people's feelings. You got it. When you look back, I announced my retirement early in the year, and so I was saying goodbye and many times to the last trips through. And in Oakland, they did a wonderful job. I remember getting a few gifts along the way and being received so well. So it gave closure. But I tell you what, emotionally, it was very difficult that year for me anyway. And then we fly back from the West Coast, and we get in late. And then 9/11 hits, and my wife comes in and grabs me, and we sit there in just shock, watching you know, what happens and listening and trying to figure this out on TV. And then the baseball season is stopped, you know, for a week, and then we resume. My first trip was to Toronto, and then we went on to New York and, let me see, Boston. So two areas that we certainly were directly affected. And so as we went into to New York, I remember they brought a lot of the kids out, of the guys that had lost their dads, in either fire rescue or police or just being there, period. And I remember looking in their eyes, and their 8-year-old kids, and I had a son that was about 8-year-old at the time, and I kept thinking, what would he do if I wasn't, you know, here? You know, what influence? And that made me really feel, you know, sad. But seeing how baseball then all of a sudden reacted, and how people reacted to baseball, and then the patriotism at the ballpark was unbelievable. And it's just people being people. And I guess sports has that ability to heal and make you feel better and maybe make you feel distracted just for a moment. And I just thought baseball did such a wonderful job. But for me personally, I think it was such an emotional time. And that was uplifting, you know, to see that. But it was also emotionally draining at the same time.
Okay, very well said. A couple more questions for Cal Ripken, and we're going to let him go. Obviously, your whole career with Baltimore, I like that you played 3,001 games, so you could say you played more than 3,000 games for the Orioles. But and I'm sure you follow them to this day. A couple days ago, Showalter got into it with Girardi. One of the unwritten rules, maybe the third base coach was showing where the catcher was setting up. And we know that Showalter is, I'd say, a little more calm than he used to be, but if he feels that there's been a slight, perceived or otherwise, he's going to go for it. What was your take on that whole little tete-a-tete?
Well, my first reaction was laugh, because you know, those sort of things, erupt every once in a while because they've been going on for a long time. I don't advocate it, and I would guess, being around the Orioles, that they weren't doing it. I would say that there's a little bit of a paranoia that occurs. And sometimes the people that react the most are the ones that actually know what they're doing and do it. But it was interesting to me, you know, what would have happened if Showalter was walking out and Girardi was walking out and nobody got in between them? Would they really have fought? I doubt it. But, again, they're taking up for their teams. And in some cases, they're very good motivators on each side. And maybe Girardi's using that a little bit to actually help motivate his team because they're in a little bit more of a desperate situation. Them and the Orioles are both fighting for that last playoff spot, and the season is very long. So I would kind of look at maybe there was some motivational aspects to it. But when things aren't going well, you tend to look for other reasons why they're not going well. And tipping pitches or third base coach giving location signs or looking at it, that doesn't happen very often. The third base coaches aren't involved in it. Most of the time it happens from second base where you got a guy off second base. They can see the signs. They can see location. And that's more commonplace. But as you can tell, it's very reactive. It gets a reaction out of both sides. And in the end, you want your team alert and ready to play, and maybe that's a method for both managers to get their teams ready to play.
And, you know, you think about what Buck gets out of that team and what he did last year and what Bob Melvin did last year with the A's. I mean, if you look at the A's on paper, you know, they broke the all-time record in the league for strikeouts. Yeah, their ERA was low, but you look through the lineup, who are the sluggers? Not a lot of guys there. What is it about a guy like Showalter, like Melvin, that can get more out of a player and that have that belief in that player?
Well, I mean, a leader is important and it matters. And the leader of the baseball team is not necessarily the shortstop or the center fielder or the catcher. It's the manager. He's in there every single day, and he's directing the lineup. And many times his job is to put the guys in position to be successful. But understanding the game, understanding the strategies of the game, and reacting and adjusting as the year goes on, if you're able to minimize, you know, your individual slumps, you're going to have a better year. If you're able to minimize your team slumps, then obviously you're going to have a better year. And there's some things that managers can do that will actually throw kerosene on the fire and make it worse and put people in pressure situations. And there are other things that they can give them more confidence. I think the both guys that you mentioned really understand the game really well. They're very competent and they really understand how hard the game was. And they really understand how fragile some of these confidences are with pitchers and regular players. So the guys that first really understand that, are aware of it, and develop techniques to deal with that are normally the guys who are going to have the long-term success. Bob Melvin, I played with him. He came over to the Orioles. And I always thought, he used to practice giving signs in the dugout and doing certain things. And you always thought that he was going to be a manager. He was going to move in. And the calmness and the confidence and the trust that the players have in him, you know, is the first step. And then going out and competing and doing it on the field, you know, as a strategist, he's very good as well. So both those guys know how to get the best out of people just because they understand the game.
Very well. And finally, Cal, your foundation, I know you're going all over the place. You're up and down the state. You're going Midwest. You're on a plane all over the place. Tell us more about the foundation, how people can find out how to contribute.
Yeah, I mean, when my dad died of lung cancer, Billy and I sat down and started to think, you know, how do you capture the legacy of Dad's life? And Dad's life was all about helping kids, and in some cases in the minor leagues it was helping kids get to the big leagues and do all the things that we talked about that Buck and Bob Melvin do very naturally as well. But he also had a side of him that he reached out to kids that didn't have all the same advantages, and especially kids that didn't have fathers, and he used baseball to get in front of them to actually create sort of a mentorship opportunity and give them a direction in their lives that could be productive, as opposed to falling in and being sucked in by some of the elements that are around them. And so all we did was create a foundation where we used baseball to get in front of kids. It's like an icebreaker. And we start to teach them about life, give them programs. And we're building youth development parks all around the country. And as the foundation, we would have been very satisfied just to serve the kids in a smaller area. But now it's grown. We're a national foundation. We're giving opportunities to build these youth development ballparks all over. So it requires me to travel a little bit around. But I got to tell you, it's very fulfilling to know that you're doing this in Dad's name, and you're doing it to help more and more kids. And sports is magical that way, and we're just taking advantage of that.
You can hear Cal and Billy, by the way, Fridays, noon to 2 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM and, of course, on TBS in the playoffs. Cal, I can't thank you enough for taking a little time to drop in, and best of luck with the foundation and your on-air work as well.
Yeah, thanks for allowing us to use your studio to broadcast our show, and thanks for talking a little baseball with me.
All right, appreciate it. Well, Brett Tittle, to be right back here on Sports Byline.